Welcome to Parents Perspective. Mrs. Baker, the voice on the other end of the line began. This is Tom's third grade teacher, Connie James. Oh, yes. Tom's mother felt her heart pounding and grabbed the nearest chair. Is there something wrong? I just thought I'd check with you, but Tom seems to have trouble concentrating in class, and his tests are showing that his reading comprehension is quite low. Oh, dear, Mrs. Baker murmured. What do you suggest? Well, I've noticed that in his records from last year, Tom has already been tested for learning disabilities, so it's not that he can't learn. It's more what he brings to the process. What does that mean? Tom's mother asked. It seems that his attention span is quite short, and he doesn't seem to take the time to listen fully. I think this is his approach to reading, too. Written language builds on what children hear. Oh, sighed Mrs. Baker. May I ask you a question about how he spends his time at home?
Certainly.
Does he watch much TV?
Well, Tom's mother began, I let him watch his special videos in the mornings if he's ready to leave early. And then, of course, he has his favorite after-school shows.
And weekends?
Well, you know, the Saturday morning cartoons. Her voice trailed off. I guess he's always been captivated by what he sees on the screen.
It seemed a whole lot better to let him watch than to fight with him about it, she wistfully explained. Thank you, Mrs. Baker, Tom's teacher replied. This helps me to understand his difficulties. Would you mind coming in one day next week so we can talk about a plan for Tom?
From a parent's perspective, what can we do to better manage our kids' screen time? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest works with the kinds of problems screen time can bring about. Robert Keston is Executive Director of the Center for Screen Time Awareness, an international nonprofit agency based in Washington, D.C., with a focus on helping families find a better way to live in vibrant, safe communities. CSTA is the only organization dedicated to taking on the negative impact of electronic media, providing people with the tools to master the technology without letting the technology master them. Mr. Keston has worked as an actor, as a producer, winning the jury prize at the Moscow Film Festival. As an educator, he's worked on foreign policy, on anti-terrorism, on Capitol Hill, and around the world. He's the father of two sons. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Robert.
Thank you very much.
So let's talk about screen time. What do we mean by that, and why is it, in quotes, bad for kids?
Well, screen time by itself doesn't mean it's bad for kids. But what we mean by screen time is anything with a screen except for a sliding door. And that means the television, the iPod, the cell phone, the electronic games, all of those kinds of things, which make us more inclined to be sedentary and solitary than really involved in real time, in real space, with real people. And the reason that these things can be bad is because they're used to substitute for life.
But what about things like educational TV and educational videos and the Baby Einstein stuff?
There is no scientific evidence at all that Baby Einstein or Brainy Baby or any of those things work. The only scientific data out there at this particular time, based on studies at the University of Washington, show that these programs really lead towards learning delays and also potentially interfere with normal brain development. So as far as what they're good for, they're not good for anything that we know of scientifically.
But does that include little videos that are made for children?
No screen time.
And do you want to explain why that is, why the doctors are adamant about that?
Because in order for a normal brain to develop, it needs interaction, it needs play, it needs to look at an adult's face or another child's face and respond to that. It needs to move. The child needs to move. There's clear evidence that children crawling adds a great deal in cognitive ability because of the way we are hooked up. So when we move, it sends messages to the brain. When we do things with our hands, it sends messages to the brain, our feet, etc. If we are sedentary and if we are solitary, we're not getting those impulses that we need in order to develop the synapses and the connections that the brain needs in order to develop properly.
So kids can go off into their social world with a passive way of learning and therefore not be able to take advantage of what they can participate in.
Oh, it's much worse than that. They also become dependent on extra stimulation, and that's undoubtedly why since 1980 and the advent of cable television and niche marketing and all of those kinds of things, and then the personal computer and the iPod and the cell phone and all this other electronic gizmos that are part of the consumer electronic world, we see a correlation between the use of personal media, which before 1980 was pretty flat and pretty consistent up until that point, to where now it's a perpendicular line to where it was in 1980 in terms of our usage. So where we watched television and listened to the radio and did all of those things for maybe a couple of hours a day, we're now inclined to spend upwards of 8 to 9 hours a day with electronic media. That's the average. Now, following that same curve, that line that went basically level until 1980 and then shot straight up, you will find the obesity curve follows that, the diagnosis of ADHD, and now through studies at Cornell University, we're also starting to see the autism curve seems to mirror that curve as well. That is not a confirmation that autism is caused by early exposure to screens, but there seems to be a correlation in the autism spectrum or in behaviors that could be construed as autism that seem to follow that line of use of early exposure to media. But the key thing here is, and I know that this is a program about a parent's perspective, parents have to remember that they are the number one role model in children's lives. And you can tell them all that you want, but unless you show them, they're not going to follow your example. And so when we talk about universal screen time reduction, and this is not elimination, this is reduction, we're talking about parents doing as they do, not as they say as well.
So parents who are sitting using their computers for hours at a time at home are modeling behavior they really don't want their children to take on.
They are modeling behavior that they have to pray and hope that their children do not take on.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on managing our kids' screen time.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Robert Keston about reducing our kids' screen time.
You're an active and creative promoter of reducing our children's screen time. What experiences have you had with this in your own family?
Well, it was sort of amusing in a sense. My children watched when they were young, and I've come to regret it. But there was a program that was done at their school, which was called TV Turnoff Week. And I thought that our PTO, we had a PTO, not a PTA, was brilliant in coming up with this concept. And it was only later that I discovered that it was a national organization that did this, that promoted it. And because of our experience during Turnoff Week, we started to adopt those principles at home. And whereas my kids would sit and watch television or want to play computer games, my now 13-year-old spends most of his time outside. And he will not go anywhere, but nowhere, without a stack of books. And he is still very socially accepted. He also plays the guitar. He has fish. He does what any normal kid his age does. He plays tennis, he plays other sports. He has a huge, wide array of friends. So it has not only not had a negative impact, it has had an extraordinarily positive impact. And so the experience for us personally has been enormous and all positive. And I always found that when there were periods when I didn't watch television or didn't spend a lot of time on the computer, that I found it very difficult to go back and do those things because they really didn't answer the needs that real life answered for me. So personally and through my family experience, I see a great improvement and a much greater zest for life.
It's funny, I was thinking when you were telling this story of times that I can remember when we've had power outages in the middle of the winter in a storm or something or other, and it's dark, and so you try to make a fire in the fireplace or you do whatever you do. And we would always gravitate to telling stories or playing games or doing something that would be a community kind of thing in the house, whereas if the power were on, everybody would be off doing his or her own thing.
There's no question about that. And we have to live that way even when we don't have power outages. It's just like if you go into most people's homes, they don't live in a living room. They don't do family things in a family room. Everybody lives in theaters. The furniture is facing the screen. Even in the bedrooms, the bed is focused so that everybody can look at the screen. And if we really want to improve family life, we know that there are two things that are extraordinarily effective. One, reducing recreational use of screens. And scientifically, it's been shown that if you reduce screen time, you will increase literacy, you will increase health and well-being, you will increase the amount of time that parents and children and spouses communicate with each other. Those are obviously good things. You will reduce violence and bullying, you will reduce the risks of risky sexual behavior, dependence on drugs, alcohol, and smoking. The same is true for families that make it a point to have family meals together. Family meals see increased academic success, decreased divorce rates, increased literacy, decrease in drug, alcohol, and risky sexual activity. Those two things, those two simple things, lowering screen time and increasing family meal time, will be the difference between a functional, happy family and the families that we see all over this country and now all over the world today. Two very simple things that we basically take for granted.
It's interesting. We always think that there are complicated solutions to complicated problems, and not necessarily so.
Not true.
Yeah. Well, before we go any further, could you tell us a little bit about the organization that you founded?
I didn't found the organization. The organization was there, and when I came on board, it was called the TV Turnoff Network. And I asked the board if we could change the name to be much more reflective to what's going on in the world today. And we changed it to Center for Screen Time Awareness. And we have a wider focus now because everything is a television. You can watch television on an iPod, on a cell phone, on a computer. You can TiVo things. You can download things. You can podcast things. I always ask people, define what you mean by television. It's a matter of programming and then the device that you use to get an access to that programming. So those are the changes that we've made. The organization is now about 15 or 16 years old, and it's most well known for what was TV Turnoff Week, which we've changed this year to Turnoff Week because, once again, TV is just one aspect. And our main focus now is not telling people to turn things off, but to tell people to explore all that's out there. There's such a risk that we're not taking advantage of the things in our own communities. Almost every community has a local museum. Even the smallest towns have a historical society or historical center, and most people in those communities have never, ever been to them. There's an opportunity. The local library, the Boys and Girls Club or the Y, a nature center, all the kinds of things that exist, and we don't take advantage of everything that's there, expecting that they will always be there, but they won't. We have to support them with our time, our effort, and our resources. So those are the kinds of things that we're really looking at, how to work with museums, how to work with libraries, how to work with the business sector. Supermarkets have fresh produce and fresh kinds of foods that are essential to our health. So how do we bring them on board? How do we get universities and schools to work together? The sporting goods store, the local bookstore. Everybody in a community has a vested interest in that community spending less time with the screen. The only business, the only nonprofit that might not have that interest is the local cable operator. Mm-hmm. And they're doing just fine. We don't have to help them. But for the local person who's selling sporting goods, for the local bookstore, for the person who's teaching a foreign language or the piano, those people need us to screen less and be active more.
Okay, we've sort of covered the idea of TV as a babysitter, videos as a babysitter, but what about the situation where the child is in front of the video, but the parent is there, and the child's moving around, but the video's on, and the focus is clearly on the video, even though the child's moving around?
The truth of the matter is ancillary television or ancillary computer noise and the like is sometimes considered far worse than the programming that's specifically designed for someone. So parents will leave the news on while they're making dinner, and the child will go in and out of that room while the child is being exposed to things that a child cannot really understand. A child hearing about Natalie Holloway disappearing in Aruba and never coming back is something that a child can't really process, or a child being kidnapped in Florida and being found mutilated is something that a child can't process. And that's why it's very important to be sensitive to what's on all the time, or better yet, leaving it off. The same is true in public spaces. Doctor's offices, especially pediatricians, should not have televisions in their waiting rooms. Airports. Parents should absolutely complain that airports should not have televisions in the waiting rooms. I just remember a couple of weeks ago flying to Buffalo, New York from Washington. And I'm at the ticket counter and getting ready to go on this plane, and there's CNN on that screen telling me that there was a plane crash in Brazil where everybody was killed. And I said, do we really need to have that information? Or I remember being in airports during the time of Katrina and seeing these young children in the airports being exposed to this. And one, it's not good for them because they can't really understand it. And two, it desensitizes them to a crisis that we needed as a nation to rally around, because all these years later, New Orleans and the Gulf is still not in the condition that it should be for success. So we're hearing bad things, we're not seeing the positive results that we need, and that also conveys the wrong messages. Taking it a step further, we look at the idea that some programming is educational, and there's no question that some programming is educational. But the results of scientific studies show that these programs are most successful when they're watched with an engaged parent. So once again, they cannot be used as a substitute. They have to be used with an engaged parent. A study was done by Sesame Street, and Sesame Street found that if you're 3 years old or over and watch Sesame Street with an engaged parent, by the time you're in second grade, you will be doing well in school. Now, that's not to say that if you don't watch Sesame Street and still have an engaged parent, you won't be doing well in school. You probably will. But what that study also found, that is, if you are under three and even watch Sesame Street with an engaged parent, your child could potentially suffer learning delays. The two-year-old brain does not function the way a three-year-old brain goes. The growth and development in the brain from birth to three is enormous. From birth to two, I think, is the biggest growth spurt that the brain actually has. And in order for it to accommodate what it needs to, bodily function, how to react to a parent, how to react to a sibling, how to do all the things that is so enormous in terms of the growth of children, learning speech, accessing information, this extra information, this presentation, this concept of learning from the screen is something that the two-year-old brain, just for whatever reason, does not absorb properly. And so therefore, it changes the connections and therefore seems to predict that there can be learning delays. Now, there are good programs out there, and sometimes they make parents cringe because Barney is considered a good program for socializing and socialization. But once again, it's very important that parents participate. So it's finding the programs that you can both watch together. But the idea is watch one program and then turn it off, and that's it for the day. Don't make it a day-long process. Don't make it one after the other. Don't make it necessarily the thing that you look forward to. It's a tool for accessing information, for learning a basic skill. Mr. Rogers was good for that. I don't know if it's still on. I believe it's on in reruns somewhere. So there are things that are good. Sesame Street, if you're 3 and over. But parents should be aware that it's not a substitute for what they can do. If you send your child to daycare, you should make sure that that daycare program does not use screens, period. Because if your child is going to then watch a half an hour when they come home, they shouldn't have already had 4 hours or 3 hours or 2 hours or even 1 hour in a daycare facility. And New York City, for example, has either limited or banned screens from some of their daycare programs because they have seen the ill effects.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on reducing kids' screen time.
For an audio CD of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parent's Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Robert Keston about managing our children's screen time.
You talked at one point about how after second grade, physicians have said that there shouldn't be TV around.
No, educators.
Okay.
When you're learning to read, that is all before second grade. So you're learning to read. You're learning the skills of the alphabet and how to put words together, how to make a sentence. But at second grade, you get to the point where now you're no longer learning to read so much as reading to learn and using books as entertainment. If you have things that are just so easy, like videos and electronic games and television, you will look at reading as work. This is part of school. This is something that's a chore rather than something that's an enjoyment, rather than something that can take you to places that you can't go any other way. So if you really limit exposure to the screen at the second grade level, the alternative is to read in order to get those same experiences. And very often you can create a lifetime reader by doing that. And there's still very few things that give us the opportunity to flex our brain muscles than reading.
Do your kids consider you embarrassing because of what you do?
There are many times when I have been told, please don't come to my school. On the other hand, I also think that they're proud because they have seen results not only in themselves, but in the communities that I've been working in. And that makes them feel good about what I'm doing.
Robert, how can parents incorporate this whole dynamic of less screen time into our children's day-to-day lives at home and at school?
Well, the most important thing is, like I said earlier, is that the parent themselves have to re-examine their role with the screen. And they have to understand that we're talking primarily about recreational use. We're not telling them not to work with the computer or not to work with the other screens that they need to work with professionally. But when they come home, they have to realize that they are the ones who decided to be parents. And it's their responsibility to spend that quality time with their children. It's important for them to get their kids outside. It's important for them to engage. It's important for them to play puzzles and play games and keep a board game out and available. Keep coloring materials out. Keep scissors and other things out or in a position that it's easy to access. Put the screen in a place where it's not so easy to access. Change the way the furniture is. Make sure that there's no electronics in a child's bedroom. That's one of the worst things that we can do to our kids, and it's one way to make sure that they have to come out of their rooms and engage us. The other thing that's vitally important is the work that's done in schools needs to be reinforced at home. So whether your child is in a pre-K program or anywhere between kindergarten and a senior in high school or even in university, it's important to reinforce what's going on in the school. If the school is encouraging reading, then you have to encourage reading. If the school is encouraging good behavior, then you have to encourage good behavior. If there is a social requirement for a school for graduation or moving up or whatever, depending on the grade, then it's important that the family itself get involved involved in a local nonprofit, a local charity, a local cause to show the child that it's as important for the parent to be doing it as it is for the child to be doing it. The more active we are as family members, the more active we are in our communities, the healthier and more well-being will be around us and our families.
Well, before we close, I'm sure all of us are interested in what kinds of resources you would suggest for those of us who want to learn more about the issues we've been discussing.
Well, the number one thing I would say is please look at our website, which is www.screentime.org. There's a good deal of information on the website. The other thing is each April there is Turn Off Week. And it would be good for families, schools, wise, religious institutions to all participate in that, not because you're turning something off, but because you're exposing yourself to everything else. We look at it as a celebration, a time when the electronics in our houses can be out of our minds and out of our day-to-day lives, and we can actually go out and enjoy all the other things that life has to offer. And then kicking off a screen time reduction plan. And there are tools on our website. There are other materials out there. There are a number of books on how to live screen-free or screen reduction. And then, of course, there's Richard Louv's book, The Last Child in the Woods, which is a very important book for understanding what makes us healthy.
There's another book that we have used over the years, a writer named James Healy, who's a PhD researcher of great note. One of our favorites is called Endangered Minds, and the subtitle is Why Children Don't Think and What We Can Do About It.
Also an excellent choice.
Yeah. Well, you have been an excellent choice. We are so delighted that you could have been with us today, Robert Keston. So thanks so very much for illuminating what we all need to know about managing our kids' screen time.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me.
A gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 363 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.